Tommy, Blackhawks are out. The Blue Jackets are now out. And really no surprise in either one. I think, you know, people looked at Tampa Bay because of, you know, what happened in those first two games. But you know what? The Lightning, they don't even have Steven Stamkos, and they look way better than they did last year.
Yeah, and you could see it on John Cooper's face and the little fist bump after he's done the handshake line with the Jackets. And you could tell, like, a sense of relief getting over that mental hurdle after, you know, it's fair to call it an embarrassment for the Lightning last year after the monster regular season that they had. And then they get bounced out by the Jackets, who are a scrappy team. Yes, they loaded up last year. And then, you know, I think even though it's a different Columbus Blue Jackets team this time around, Griggs, I really feel like there's still that mental hurdle you need to get over, and that hump that's in your mind. You still need to beat that team. They come at you knowing that they beat you last season in the postseason, and the Tampa Bay Lightning were able to do that. So I think, you know, you see that sense of relief from John Cooper afterwards and the elation from the players. Great play by Braden Point. I mean, obviously he's having a good postseason as well. It factored in on those last three goals for the Lightning. Props, honestly, to the Columbus Blue Jackets, and no props to John Tortorella. I'm not trying to say that as a whiny baby from the media, but Gregor, like, there's an etiquette to the rapport between players and media, and then coaches and media, and he just takes it and trounces all over it. Some people love it. I get it. It's entertaining at times, but at the same time, you know, we as media are trying to do our job, and this guy goes and just walks away because he doesn't like a question that wasn't even, it was a softball question today. I just wanted to say that. I don't like that. And there's so many good examples of coaches who hate dealing with media that handle it like a pro. It's just like, come on, man. John Cooper's one of them, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it's not even close. Not even close at all. So now you look at the Toronto Raptors. They're up 2-0. Not really a surprise, but the Lakers game last night, entertaining game for sure, and the weakness of the Lakers, which I said was guard play at the start of the playoffs, really gets shone through because the strength of Portland is their guard play. It's not even close. And that's why I said at the start, I didn't pick the Lakers. I don't think they're going to win. I could think they could win their series. I don't think they're going to win the championship because in a league where guard play is essential, they don't have good enough guard play.
This is, I mean, I don't know the intricacies of basketball as well as you guys do, but whenever I see LeBron, I know he's aging, I know he's a superstar, but I still can't count him out. And listen, Portland's scrappy, and they're, I know Lillard's being a monster for them. You're talking about his huge three-pointer yesterday. I get that. But I still, to me, it's like, how do you count out the Lakers after what was a tremendous season? And I don't go into the depth of the game as well as you guys do. I'll reiterate that, but I still think, you know, I laugh at Charles Barkley going, hey, they're going to sweep. And that's comic relief. And that's him being a good showman as well. But is Portland really that good that they're going to sweep LeBron and the Lakers? Like is guard play aside, is that going to happen? Or are we going to have ourselves a real series here?
Oh, I think you're going to have a real series. Like, I think, you know, he's playing it up. Barkley's funny because, you know, now, like, think about it. He goes on national TV. He's Shaq, who's a former Laker, won there. Of course, he's just, you know what? People forget that part of it's entertainment. Mm-hmm. Right? He pokes the bear because, you know, Shaq's going to be losing it. He's, you know, he bleeds Lakers as he should. He's never going to, like, he's still a good analyst, but of course he's going to, you know, lean Lakers. There's LeBron James. Everybody loves it. Lakers are still one of the, you know, the biggest, if not the biggest draw in the NBA. So to go out there and say that, now you're going to have all the other fans in Lakerland, if he loses, yeah, Barkley, you're an idiot. Of course he doesn't care because he knows that's part of it. And if he's right, he'll be able to poke fun at the biggest, largest fan base around for a long time. So, yeah, are they sweeping him? No. Now, if they do, man, Barkley's a genius. But could Portland pull the upset off? Sure, they could. Right? Because they have such an advantage at the guard play. And if their three big guys can contain the you know, at least just not just get blown out by the big guys, then yeah, maybe you have a chance.
Well, the discrepancy in their regular seasons is monstrous. So I love a good upset as much as anyone, but let's see this one play out. But I'm not sure, Greg's. I'll sit back and eat popcorn and watch Charles and Shaq go back and forth, and then see what happens on the court and just take it all in as a fan in that regard.
Now, Tommy, a few other – you always send me some interesting things to discuss.
I'm glad you like them.
The minor league baseball, right? You know, players are – well, there's really no minor league baseball this year, right?
Right.
So many of them have – you know, and funny thing is, like, minor league baseball, when you look at a league where – I shouldn't say a league, a business, where the minor league baseball players – virtually make nothing. Like, at least in the minors, you know, you get an entry-level contract in hockey, you're a 20-year-old player, you're making, you know, $70,000 American dollars. That's a lot of money, right? Like, there's grown men and women who never make that. Never mind being at 20, and a lot of these players live at home, right, in the offseason, because they're 20 years of age, right?
Right.
They don't have a house yet, so at least you can get by financially there if you're playing in the American League. Right. You know, sure, some are making 60 or 50, but still, and that's American money. Keep that in mind. Compared to what they do in minor baseball. Like, I'm kind of surprised more of these minor league baseball players didn't have a second job before this year.
Well, the ESPN wrote a great article, and it just kind of shows you, again, another discrepancy between what guys in the majors make. And listen, Major League Baseball is basically a license to print money. It's an absolute factory in how it does that. And it's incredible, though, that you could see guys on the low end of the totem pole, guys in Class A, where, Gregor, they're making about $5,800 in a season. And that's in 5 months of work and then spring training. $5,800. $5,800. It's unbelievable. So ESPN did this article. They followed a bunch of guys that are prospects in baseball. Some of them had to become Uber drivers. These aren't just kids either. And that's kind of the difference between hockey and baseball is you got these guys that go through college and most of them actually play a few years of college as opposed to a lot of guys in hockey who generally play a couple of years and then, you know, they do get a minor pro contract or even an NHL deal. And they make the jump at like 21, 22. We see a lot of these guys getting signed after the NCAA season. But these baseball guys, they're 24, 25, 26. Some of them have families. Some of them are married. Some of them are just starting out families. And they've basically had the legs cut out from under them. Okay, no season of baseball when it comes to the minor leagues. We're hearing that there may be contraction when it comes to minor league baseball next season, almost 40 teams. That's hundreds of jobs. Granted, they're not high-paying jobs. So some of these guys have literally become, like one guy was working, he was a Mets prospect as a pitcher, and he was working at Lululemon in L.A., and I think it was Trevor Bauer walked in to buy Lululemons, and one of the coworkers was like, oh, you should meet our coworker. He's a Mets pitcher. And Bauer's like, oh, cool, never heard of him. And he said that was the aha moment for him where he's like, I need to figure out what I'm doing here because a legit MLB player basically just was trying to be nice. But for himself, he felt embarrassed. And he's like, I got to figure out what to do. And some of these guys are actually starting to coach baseball. And they're coaching, I guess what would be the equivalent of like travel teams and there's not really rep teams anymore here. What do we have? Like club hockey now. And they're making way more money doing that as opposed to actually pitching and trying to make it to the majors. It's just, it's really alarming and it shows you the difference. And I know as you progress through, Class A, High A, Double A, Triple A, the money gets a little bit better, but Greg's guys in Triple A ball, they're not even making a ton of cash unless they're a high-end prospect that got a sweet signing bonus and they're on their way to the show. But that's not the majority of guys. Some of these guys are struggling just to live. And it's really hits home when you find out some of them are driving Uber. Some of them are whatever checks they're getting from their teams. And it's like every MLB team has its own policy on how it's going to handle whoever's still left on their in their system, because a lot of them were released when this thing hit, the COVID situation hit. And some of them are sending that money back home to Venezuela, stuff like that. And it's like $20 a week, $40 a week, just here and there to help out. It's crazy to see how far reaching COVID has been. And then when you think of athletes, we generally go, well, if you're a pro athlete, you're doing pretty darn good. Not the case. So I highly recommend the article. It's on ESPN.com. It shows you and enlightens you on how bad some of these guys have it, and there might not be jobs coming back next year.
Oh, no question about it. Now, some would argue that baseball had too many minor league levels, right? And they were making sure money off it, and basically they're exploiting players by paying them nothing, at single A ball level and making all this money. So, we'll see what happens. It'd be a fascinating one to look at. But staying with baseball, I might have a new favorite player to watch. Fernando Tatis Jr., of course. And you know what I loved? I liked old school players like Johnny Bench and others came to his defense. Sadly not his own manager, who, of course, the next day realized that he made a bonehead move, Jace Tingler, who then the next day was like, hey, we're not worried about people's feelings. Oh, really? Well, then you were worried about it the day before. But nonetheless, Tatis Jr. steals third base with his team leading six. He's leading the MLB in home runs, RBIs, runs scored, and stolen bases. Like, this guy, everybody should be applauding him. Hey, he's being aggressive in every situation, which is what baseball needs more of, in my opinion.
Hey, we're in a season where you're down to 60 games, and I mean, even that's that might be in question depending on what happens with COVID in baseball, which we've witnessed ravage a few teams. I understand the unwritten rules. I get it. It's kind of, if people aren't that into baseball, it's kind of like when you put out your power play when you're up like 5-0 and you're putting out your top unit to go and maybe score another goal. That's kind of along the same lines of what Tatis has done in the last couple of days. Hits a grand slam when the team's up big, steals a base. But you're right. Like, you're in a situation where every win counts. And every team, except for the Pittsburgh Pirates, probably thinks they have a shot at it this season. So you're going to do everything you can to win. And this is a young player that's coming in here. Maybe, yeah, it's brash, but he wants to win. He wants to lead the league in a couple of different categories. Good for him. He's hungry. And so maybe some of his peers won't appreciate that, and they'll look at him and say, hey, jerk move. But at the same time, I think we're kind of at this turning point in baseball, too, where it's like, is that old way of thinking, the traditionalist way of thinking, is it starting to fade away? I kind of feel like it really is, Greggs. And I think Tatis is at the forefront of this, and he's the lightning rod in baseball. And, maybe we're going to see other sports start to evolve as well. Will things change in hockey? Will things change in basketball? Will things change in football? And I think, Tatis is at the forefront of the movement in baseball.
Tom Gazzola joins us next at Sports Leader TSN 1260. Quickly, Tommy, we look to tonight in the National Hockey League. Canucks and the Blues. The Canucks win the first two. Looked like they're in control. Now the champs have come back and have won two. What feel do you have heading into a pivotal game five?
Ooh, this is, I'm going to go to this game. I want to see how the Canucks handle some adversity here. Have they awoken the beast? Has St. Louis figured out how to get to Vancouver? It seems like it. Have they remembered what it's like to get that winning feeling back? It seems like it. I am completely shocked that it's Jake Allen in goal for St. Louis and getting it done. I know you said Woodley brought up Allen as somebody to maybe target in the next, offseason. But I thought Binnington would be the guy to lead them again. He was great this season. And here we are. And this is, again, the twists and turns of the postseason and an abnormal postseason to begin with. And all the elements of a championship team are there for St. Louis. Was it you that brought up the fact that they looked disinterested through the first round robin games and the first couple games? Is that something that you categorize, Greggs, I believe?
Oh, well, they didn't look invested is what
right.
They didn't do to me. Right?
Right.
And, it's funny. Like, they changed it. I don't know. Maybe the Blues just need to change their goaltender at crucial times, because last season they changed to Binnington and they went on a roll. And now they changed to Jake Allen. They've won two games, their first two in the bubble. So maybe that's all it is. Maybe they're just like, oh, we had a new goalie. Well, geez, we better not embarrass them. Let's pull up our socks and play.
Hey, it's a championship caliber team. And I, it feels like they've woken up, but they dug themselves a hole. They've dug themselves out of it. Can Vancouver, this is a true test for this young up-and-coming Canucks squad. This is a team I thought maybe could make a Cinderella run. This is a pivotal game. Let's see what kind of gusto the Canucks have. But I think you may be right that St. Louis has awoken, and we'll see who comes out on top in this game. This could go seven, and I think that would be fantastic. And as for Calgary, if you're hearing Jeff Ward saying, I think that was the most panicked or worried our team looked in a while when they lost that game to Dallas the other day, it could be troubles bubbles for the Flames.
Tommy, have a good one. Enjoy the game.
Thank you, Gregs.